We get it. You're busy. You don't have time to waste on the mainstream media. That's why Salem News Channel is here. We have hosts worth watching, actually discussing the topics that matter. Andrew Wilkow, Dinesh D'Souza, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. We're not like the other guys. We're Salem News Channel. Watch anytime on any screen for free 24/7 at snc.tv and on Local Now, Channel 525.
Hey, everybody. 10 to Charlie Kirk Show. We reflect on the death of Dianne Feinstein. And also, we have Matt Gaetz join the program on the latest out of the 9:30 fight. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. As always, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com. And again, getting involved with Turning Point USA is really important. TPUSA.com. That is TPUSA.com. Become a member, charliekirk.com members. It's members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. The breaking news today, which is worth some examination and reflection, is the passing of Senator Dianne Feinstein. We don't celebrate the death of our political adversaries. We are not on the left. We wish her family well. It's not easy to lose a loved one. And I pray for her. I pray for her in eternity. I have no idea what any decisions she made at the end of her life. But let's focus on her political career. Dianne Feinstein, here's a fact. She was a United States senator longer than I have been alive. 31 years. That means today, Friday, September 29th, is the first day that I am alive that Dianne Feinstein is not a U.S. senator. Think about that. My entire life, every single day, has been filled with Senator Dianne Feinstein. Her whole life was about advancing in politics. And she was pretty good at it. Really ambitious, scrappy, willing to make deals. She kind of made a whole campaign around an extension of the feminine mystique. We've kind of played around with this feminine mystique, modern woman doctrine that was composed by Betty Friedan. If you want to know where the American feminist movement started, the feminine mystique is a really good place as a genesis and origination. A lot of it came out of California, and Dianne Feinstein was perfectly positioned in California. Former mayor of San Francisco, similar to Gavin Newsom. She was actually a better mayor than Gavin Newsom was. San Francisco was still a respectable city back then. But it was all about progress, all about bringing forth the revolution. In 1978, she held a press conference following the killing of San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk. Moscone's designated successor was in office a few feet away from the shooting. She said, "I heard shots. I heard three," Feinstein said. In 79, all throughout gay power, there was this one thing. She was one of the leaders of the Gay Power March, 15,000 marchers also carrying candles during a march to remember Harvey Milk. By the way, Harvey Milk was not a good guy. Let's just be clear. This whole romanticizing of Harvey Milk is honestly reprehensible and disgusting. That's a separate show for a different time. But Dianne Feinstein dedicated her life to the revolution. We've said many times that we are living through a cultural revolution. Honestly, she would be one of the top 10 most important people that dedicated every ounce of being to immanentizing the eschaton. Now, that is a rather wonky academic term that William F. Buckley used to say, which means we're trying to immanentize the perfection. For Christians out there, you know what the eschaton is. That is when Christ will come again. They're trying to bring forth utopia on earth. Feinstein looked at her entire career as a way to accelerate the progressive revolution. Abortion was one of her biggest issues, obviously, and not just safe, legal, and rare abortion. We're talking about the most radical, unthinkable, heinous abortion practices, abortion right up until the baby is born. She also focused a ton of attention, especially in 2012 through 14, on gun confiscation, especially after the Sandy Hook shooting, when she still had a little bit of spirit, she led all in on trying to confiscate our weapons. Now, before I get misunderstood by making it seem as if I'm giving some sort of a positive reflection on Dianne Feinstein's life, I think it's important to note that it's hard to find a figure in modern politics who loved power, who loved being a politician, who dedicated their life to the expansion of the state and the destruction and the refounding of America as much as Dianne Feinstein. Maybe Nancy Pelosi, interestingly enough, from the same city. Maybe Pelosi. Feinstein believed that political power was the most important thing a human being can engage in. And you think about it, part of this is actually really sad. While I don't believe that retirement is something that we should necessarily overly platform in our country, I think some people retire when there is way too much potential still left, I don't think that it's a good thing to say that someone who is cognitively impaired had one of the most important positions in the entire U.S. government. Instead of her spending her last few years with her grandkids, she was too busy on subcommittees about renaming post offices and sending foreign aid to Namibia or Kenya. But for her, that was the most important thing. For her, being a senator all up until her death was the ultimate purpose, because she believed, as Hegel believed, that the state is the closest thing to God on this earth. Now, all the eulogies are coming in for Dianne Feinstein. They're saying she is an amazingly dedicated leader. She's an inspiration to women everywhere. And that's an interesting question. Is Dianne Feinstein a good role model for women? Is Dianne Feinstein somebody that we should lift up like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Nancy Pelosi? You see, you look at how the media goes all in on the eulogizing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Feinstein, perfect examples, incredibly radical. They want young women to look up to them. Why? Because they dedicated every ounce of their being towards activism, towards revolutionary type posture. And you're starting to see the news coverage. I'm trying to find it. It was in the cold open. This is a very long cut sheet, but you heard it say, you know, she was a trailblazer for women. And again, I'm not celebrating the death of anybody. I don't like it. But it's worth asking, did Dianne Feinstein live a good life? Did she live a virtuous life? Did what she dedicated herself to make America less free or more free? And more importantly, what is the legacy of Dianne Feinstein? Is it the fact that she had a Chinese driver for over 20 years? You think about it, they say she was a trailblazer. She trailblazed for women by sitting in an office so nobody else could have it. And this is not just isolated to Dianne Feinstein. This is in both political parties. And now I'm about to get into a topic that I don't think is going to be very warmly received by a lot of you, but it needs to be said, which is when you have people like Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein that are far past their prime, that make the Senate look more like a nursing home with votes than actually a place where robust debate occurs and the representation of voters, that is a bad thing for the country. It's a very bad thing. Now, I say this because some of you are going to say, Charlie, you know, respect your elders. I respect my elders so much that I don't want to have them go through the pain of having to sit on some committee where they obviously are not understanding every word. Mitch McConnell is short-circuiting on a regular basis now. Dianne Feinstein was unable to even hear questions recently, as much a couple months ago. Joe Biden. What I'm getting at is that we have a nursing home ruling class running America right now. And that is not healthy. We are a great country with tons of energy and potential. People that are willing to work the 20-hour days. People that want to start to give their all. But the people that are still at the top level of society are disproportionately mentally incapable, physically incapable at governing their best. And there's another very interesting wrinkle to this. Because you would think that when you have a bunch of elderly people, again, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. Chuck Grassley would be the exception. He has more energy than most 30-year-olds that I know. So he's an exception. But large in part, Biden, Pelosi, McConnell, and now the deceased Feinstein, not the best America has to offer. But what's amazing is that you would think when you have elderly people, they would be temperamentally conservative and politically conservative. It's the opposite. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire. Let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/charlie. That is paxfg.com/charlie. I have some of my money managed by Pax Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the Pax Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend Pax's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, paxfg.com/charlie. So what is strange is that if you have a bunch of elderly people that are representing the country, you would think that they would have greatest generation values. This is what is so bizarre. So if you have a bunch of people in their late 80s and early 90s, you would think that they would be against the trans nonsense, believe in a border. When I meet amazing Americans in their 80s and 90s, they're very, very conservative. It's very hard to travel the country and find somebody in their early 90s that is flying a trans flag, unless they're being like manipulated by a granddaughter or something else, which is not, it's not kind of a side point. That's actually what ends up happening, especially with the Senate. But what we have is not only do we have leaders that are cognitively unable to do their job, but they're also progressively radical. You would think that if you have an old ruling class, they would be stodgy and saying no to all the bad ideas and like constantly complaining. Oh, the kids nowadays, they have the purple hair and they're cutting off their breasts and they're taking Lupron and we don't have a border. I would love that. If we had a bunch of 80-somethings where all they did was complain about left-wing liberalism and do something about it, no problem. Seriously, no problem. Instead, we have elderly men who, you know, their testosterone rates go down as they get older. Their estrogen rates increase, so they just lose their spirit. You see this a lot sometimes where elderly men, they kind of go out of their way to try to find agreement and they get worn down by the fight. I'm going to be overly generous. Producer and Andrew and I were talking about this, is that the left will wear you down. So some of these elderly men get into their late 80s and they're like, well, why can't we just come together and compromise? And the left, they're revolutionaries. And then the women, they become very hard. Some of them as they get older, especially in the Senate. Look at Feinstein, look at Pelosi. Patty Murray. It's just the roster continues, right? And they want to white knuckle onto power. And the Senate has for quite some time operated much closer to an elderly person's country club than actually a legislative body. They do very little work. They don't really read bills. They're largely run by their staff, which is interesting because the staff are super radical, like unbelievably radical. So Feinstein wasn't actually doing any work the last year to 5 years. It was her Berkeley-educated, Stanford-graduated, UCLA-trained staff who believe in all of these revolutionary elements. But it would be one thing to say, well, Charlie, we don't have the ruling class that has the mental capacity to govern. That's totally true. But it's even worse. It's that they're trying to live out their 1960s, early 70s youth while they're 88 years old. They never stopped being hippies. And that's what's so fascinating, is that they've never stopped actually being at Woodstock. Feinstein and the rest of them, they have such an attachment to the energy and to the rebellion, to the burn it all attitude of SDS, Students for a Democrat Society, to all of the anti-war, anti-establishment movements, that they've never stopped viewing themselves through the lens that they are the revolutionaries, that they are the Bolsheviks. Because you would think that if you have groups of older people, they would at least be concerned about a legacy and conservation. You would think that if you have a Dianne Feinstein, if you have a Joe Biden, if you have a Mitch McConnell, if you have a John Cornyn, any one of these elderly people, you could go list by, I mean, I'm barely touching the surface, by the way. I think the average age in the Senate is like 74. Blake can look it up. The average age. You would think that at some point they would say, we're going to say no. Instead, it's McConnell that is the chief pom-pom waiver for money to Ukraine. None of the geriatric class in the cabal of DC seemed even slightly concerned about borrowing trillions of dollars and handing it to their grandkids. They don't care. And this gets to a much deeper, more troubling moral issue that we are not going to be able to unpack, which is this is the first elderly ruling class in the history of America that intentionally leaves a damaged country for their kids. Intentionally. That's really sick stuff. Strong Cell is amazing. I got to tell you, the combination of NADH, CoQ10, and collagen is really something. You know, people ask me, they say, Charlie, how do you keep your energy up? How do you just keep on pushing? Look, part of it is diet, nutrition, but I'll be honest, I take supplements really seriously. Fact check me on this. You can say, oh, Charlie, I'm going to fact check you. Type this into your search engine. NADH. Just type it in. What does it tell you? It might tell you that it is the secret to living long, anti-aging properties, more energy. Well, all of that is being proven in more and more clinical trials. NADH is a precursor so that your mitochondria can remain healthy and vibrant. The elites, a lot of billionaires, people with a lot of money, they spend a ton of money on NAD. It's a fact. NAD just might be your secret weapon for more energy. I take NAD every single day. I could tell you that NADH compared with CoQ10, the trials show very, very good things. I don't take my word for it. I mean, honestly, my word should be good for something, but fact check me. Look at it. And if you do it over 30 days, you'll see an increase in energy. I wake up better than ever before. NAD can help you potentially, again, fact check me on this, with depression, anxiety, other issues that you might be dealing with. It is nature's gift to you so that you might have extra energy and mental clarity. You guys can use promo code Charlie for 20% off. It's strongcell.com/Charlie. NAD might be nature's secret weapon for you. I love it. I take it every single day. Try to try it for at least 30 days to see the maximum benefit. And let me know, has NAD helped your life? Strongcell.com/Charlie. Check it out. Strongcell.com/Charlie. Shifting gears a little bit now to the 930 funding fight. Matt Gaetz joins us, who is really the center of attention right now. Matt, thank you for taking the time. Several questions, but first, I just want to give you an opportunity. What is going on? I mean, look, they say the government's going to shut down tomorrow. Matt, is that going to happen?
Well, the House of Representatives has passed bills to fund veterans, to fund our military, the Department of Defense, to fund our state and foreign operations, and to also fund our Department of Homeland Security. The Senate has not passed a single subject bill to fund anything. So we think those are the core functions of government: veterans, military, border, state and foreign ops. We had the agriculture appropriations bill up last night. I voted for it. Unfortunately, we had some Midwesterners who were not comfortable with the degree of cuts to some of the farming subsidies. And so they brought the bill down, and we'll work through those issues. I think that this is the way to govern. There's going to be moments where a single issue becomes a sticky wicket, and I want to plow through it, get it done. I hope the Senate will take up some of our bills. We should conference those bills and then proceed to get the government funded.
So the House has passed it to the Senate, and the Senate is probably not going to do anything. Is that correct? I mean, so, and by the way, by single issue, did you guys pass an entire budget or just a defense appropriation bill? Which single issue did you guys pass?
Yeah, the latter. So we passed a bill for our Department of Defense, for our Department of State and Foreign Ops, for our Department of Homeland Security, and our Department of Veterans Affairs. So those are areas of great focus for a lot of your viewers, for a lot of our fellow Americans. The Senate could take action on those today. Instead, what the Senate wants to do is say, well, we just want to fund everything the way it's always been funded, and then maybe negotiate how much additional Ukraine money to add on top of that. We had a majority of the majority, 117 Republicans last night for the first time vote against Ukraine money. So now Ukraine money only exists by virtue of the Democrats, and our leadership should not bring it up ever again. That, I think, is the Senate position, and it is the position that really the federal government has had since the mid-90s, just to take one up or down vote on the funding of the entire government. I don't believe that's the responsible way to put downward pressure on inflationary spending. That's why I think this is a better path.
So are there other single issue bills that you guys are going to pass before tomorrow? I mean, trying to basically, since we're not doing a CR, which I think is a great approach, by the way, you have to probably put together five or six separate single issue bills, right, to get to the combined totality. Is that correct? Because otherwise a CR...
Yeah, not all 12 bills are the same, right? So, what you know, we attempted to pass the agriculture bill. We still have issues to work through on that. If we were to get the agriculture bill passed along with what we've already passed, it's 73% of the discretionary funding for the government. So it is the vast majority of the federal government's function and the spending that Washington approves for our disparate agencies. There would still be work to do. Look, I think there's going to be some real debate around the Department of Justice's bill. I think that one is not first because we'd rather prioritize our veterans, our troops, our border patrol over some of the folks at the FBI who aren't answering our requests for documents without putting up a massive fight and don't produce the witnesses in a timely fashion that we want to interview. So I do think there is a reason to the priority that we have chosen, and I think it is sound.
So Matt, I want you to try to fill in our audience the best you can of some inside baseball. There were some heated conversations because there's been some vicious and unfair influencer attacks against you. Who are behind these attacks, Matt Gaetz?
I don't know. I saw a bunch of MAGA influencers we know and love post that McCarthy proxies were reaching out to them to ask them to post negative things about me for money. And a lot of those influencers rejected that solicitation and then posted their rejection of it to indicate that they're supportive of the position I've taken to try to get our fiscal house in order. And so we had a meeting of our conference. I simply asked Speaker McCarthy, was it indeed his proxies or some lawyer sent out a letter that said he didn't have anything to do with it? And I wanted to know which was true because there was conflicting information. And it was kind of pathetic to watch. I mean, he mumbled and grumbled and looked down at his shoes, and everyone that was in the room could objectively see that when he said that it wasn't him who was behind these things, that didn't come from a place of great veracity.
So Matt, I want to ask you also about this story from Olivia Beavers. I'm sure you've seen it. She's claiming that you're pitching some House Democrats to oust McCarthy from the speakership. What is the truth here?
Yeah, no, I am singularly focused on getting our spending bills across the line. That is where my effort has been. Of course, Democrats have come up to me seeking gossip, wanting to know, oh, what are you thinking about the motion to vacate? And I've told them, right now, I'm focused on these bills. We do have to deal with the fact that Kevin McCarthy has been a failure, that Kevin McCarthy has not fulfilled his promises. He hasn't released the January 6th tapes. We haven't seen the budgeting process that was guaranteed to us back in January. So we'll deal with that. We will have to deal with that. It is not my focus now. I'm worried about people who are going to be doing the job of this government that deserve to get a paycheck And we've, you know, it's not like if we don't get this resolved tomorrow, people are going to miss paychecks, but we do need to get to work. We need to start working 18-hour days. I mean, we were taking votes all night last night, all the way to midnight, same as the night before. We've done more legislating in the last 72 hours around here than we've done in the last 8 months. And it's because there are some tough House conservatives who are forcing it.
Yeah, and that's inspiring, but also frustrating, Matt. I mean, you guys took the whole month of August off, right? It shouldn't have to be this bum rush, right? I mean,
I don't make the calendar. That's Kevin's fault. That is McCarthy's fault. Kevin McCarthy never intended to do this. He never intended to have single subject bills. The only reason we're passing them now is because we're making him pass them. And if Kevin McCarthy was at all serious about this, you're totally right. We wouldn't have passed one before the August break and then sent everybody home as the federal appropriation process hung in the balance.
So the single subject bills, the Senate's not going to do this. Like the Senate, they're a complete waste of time. So basically, are they going to send back a CR back to the House and then there's going to be an impasse? That's probably what's going to happen, right?
Breaking the muscle memory of the Senate is not going to be easy. I don't present that as something that is whimsical in any way. But we have to break the fever. We have to break the muscle memory that has occurred since the mid-90s to govern by continuing resolution and omnibus bill. And remember what we are continuing. What we are continuing is the post-COVID era funding that grew by 40% during the COVID era. So I just think that, yes, you're right. The Senate is going to be tough. They're going to be recalcitrant. But I think if we had all of our Republicans in the House, if we had the American people saying, look, you know, we know there has to be compromise and divided government. We know that people like Gates are going to have to make some common ground with some Senate Democrats to get the government funded. But the way to do that is not to start with the premise that it's all or nothing, that it's all at once. The premise should be individual review. And then you know what? We may actually get more bipartisan agreement when you're looking at these agencies and programs and different spending priorities that may have lost their efficacy years or decades ago.
Yeah, and so there was 117 Republicans who voted against Ukraine funding. There was 20 last time. This is moving very quickly, Matt. We're starting to see consensus build. Can you just talk a little bit about that as far as how you've seen the Overton window shift? I mean, from 20 people voting against Ukraine funding to 117.
When we started with the group of people that did not want our country involved in the Ukraine war, we could have met in the Capitol elevator and still had room for social distancing. Now we're 117 strong. We are a majority of the majority. And that is because Congress is the lagging indicator. Republican voters believe that we've sent enough money to Ukraine, that now we need to focus on our border, our country, the safety on our streets, the quality of education in our schools. I mean, we are literally spending $3.5 billion to retire debt that Ukraine accrued before the war began. So we're going into debt to pay off Ukraine's debt. That's how crazy some of these programs are. And it's only through this process that we are acquiring that we're able to highlight that and draw people to our side. Like the only way you go from having 3, 4, 5, 7 votes to having 117 is you have to keep taking votes.
Yep.
You have to keep having the argument and ultimately you chip away at it.
So I want to just talk real, and you're doing the right thing. Single subject. I love it. Joe Biden is not going to sign some of these bills, right? And so therefore, they might call it a government shutdown. If that happens, Matt, which you're not cheering for, I'm cheering for a shutdown. I can't stand the government, but you're not. You're a lawmaker. You're responsible. I'm an upset patriot.
I am not cheering for a shutdown.
Well,
that is correct.
I am. I want a shutdown, but that's a separate issue. It's not even a real shutdown. It's a slowdown or a pause. What were to happen if the government were to pause tomorrow evening? I just want to make sure everyone understands. We're not talking about the sky has fallen, Chicken Little stuff, Matt.
No, I believe... Oh, excuse me, Charlie, I think I might have lost my sound. But what I believe is that you really start to feel the highest levels of pain in these shutdowns when people start missing paychecks. And so if we can get the Senate onto these bills, if we can work out a funding strategy before halfway through October, that's a very different thing than if you have a shutdown that's over the weekend, which would barely be felt by anyone, or that might last a couple days during a work week. I don't want people missing paychecks. I don't want people wearing the uniform missing paychecks. And by the way, they wouldn't have to. Charlie Kirk, I'm telling you right now, Schumer can bring up our defense bill anytime he wants. He can pass it and we can get our troops paid.
No, 100%. But the likelihood is that Schumer and Biden are going to let it shut down, partial shutdown, slow down, pause, and then they're going to blame Matt Gaetz and these people. But it's a lot more complicated than that. I just hope you guys are all bracing for impact. We've lived through these. It's a bunch of media bluster, okay? It's a bunch of DEI bureaucrats at the Department of Interior that don't go to work for a couple days, okay? Do not allow that to hold you hostage. Hey, Charlie Kirk here. If you guys love this program and you want to support this program, if we have impacted or blessed your life in any way, I want to tell you about a new thing that we are starting it up. First of all, if you have supported us at charliekirk.com/support, nothing to worry about. You guys are going to be moved on over. If you want to support us even more and say, hey, I want exclusive content, I want to talk to Charlie directly, we are standing up this amazing infrastructure. Team's been working so hard at members.charliekirk.com. Not only is it a way to support us directly outside of all of the other channels, but get this, live Q&As with me and the team, articles exclusively written by me that you won't find anywhere else, pre-show prep calls, and more. Sign up today at members.charliekirk.com. We love bringing our show every day, and we can't wait to bring you even more content that is just for you at the Charlie Kirk exclusive. That's members.charliekirk.com. Head to members.charliekirk.com today. Yes, there's going to be a lot of goodies, a lot of engagement, a lot of fun stuff. But even more than that, if you feel moved and compelled that our show is impacting you and impacting the world, it would mean a lot if you became a member at members.charliekirk.com. One of the attack vectors against Trump and all this is Cassidy Hutchinson. And you have said that you had a relationship with Cassidy Hutchinson. She's denying. She's a liar. What's the truth here, Matt?
I've said all I'm going to say about that. I think she tried to create a false narrative around a lot of people who knew her, who worked with her, who had, you know, various and sundry personal, you know, connections and affections. And she, I think, has really gone down a dark path of deceit. And I don't love seeing that, but I don't have much to offer there.
So, Matt, what are the marching orders then coming into the weekend? What are the bills that are the most important as we piecemeal our way to try to avoid a shutdown?
Yeah, I think we have to build this government, you know, kind of brick by brick, stone by stone here. And I think we need to start with our veterans and our military and our border. And if we get that rolling, I think it builds momentum to the other areas where we need deep cuts. I mean, we passed a Department of State bill that cuts down to 2014 levels. It gets rid of a bunch of this woke and weaponized activity that occurs at the Department of State. I would love to see that bill become law. And then, of course, you know, we've got a Department of Justice that really has seen a metastasization of their bad politics, really masquerading as criminal justice and law enforcement.
So the next 24 hours are going to be super important. How could this be, let's just say, swampified? How could the cartel try to navigate here? Because this is what happens.
That's a great question.
So yeah, please.
Yeah. Anything that they can do to liberate themselves from reviewing these agencies independently. The swamp move is always a move that lumps everything together, and that way you're forced to just take one up or down vote on the entire government all at once. That is their play. It's the same exact play they've been running for decades. That's why we're $33 trillion in debt. It's why we have $2.2 trillion annual deficits staring us in the face. And it's why the rest of the world is starting to de-dollarize, from the BRICS system to the African Union to even some of the Gulf monarchies selling more and more of their energy outside the U.S. dollar. This is not a time to crush the most valued institution in the American economy, the dollar.
Yeah, and I can start to see, though, the rumblings that moderate Republicans might try to go do a deal with Democrats. How do we prevent that from happening? Don Bacon, for example.
That may happen. And by the way, if that's going to happen, that was always going to be what was going to happen. If at the end of all the performances, you were going to see moderate Republicans join up with their uniparty coalition in the Democrats to advance Joe Biden's priorities, then that exposes to the American people who you are governed by. And I'm doing everything I can to stop the uniparty, to force them to take votes, to force them to budget and work and appropriate as the law requires. And it's going to be a battle, and the battle's on.
Yeah, this is my big fear, is that we have all this great fight, single subject. But tonight, it would not be impossible if Don Bacon and some of the moderates just put a clean CR on the floor. I don't even know if it has to go through committee. And then every Democrat votes alongside of it, and it goes to the Senate.
Sure. That very well could happen. And my defense against that is somewhat limited on the floor of the House.
Except but, PR type campaign. And, that's all we have.
And,
right?
And I'm not speaking about any one particular member, but if we have members that go do that, we will be seeding the fields of the upcoming primary challenges for people who would join with Democrats to advance Joe Biden's spending priorities. At some point, you've just got to win elections, win primaries, and get better Republicans. And if our Republicans are going to go do a bad, dirty deal with the Democrats, I'm going to do everything in my power as one member to see that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And so just who are the names of some of the moderates that are I know Don Bacon. I've known Don for years, and I'm not happy with how he's been doing things recently. I'm not saying he's a bad person. I just don't like his approach. Who are the other moderates that we should put some pressure on to say, hey, don't go do a deal with Democrats?
Well, look, there are moderates who've been helping. Mike Molinaro of New York is the guy who actually had the idea to get onto this packet of single subject bills that met most of our nation's priorities. So I don't want to cast any one group as being destructive, but I think that the people in districts that Joe Biden won, I think that people in blue states with a big Democrat infrastructure in California, New York, are likely feeling the heat more on these matters than other members. I still want to work collaboratively with all of our members, and certainly Mark Molinaro of New York has been an ally to date, trying to get some momentum in the appropriations process.
Matt Gaetz, everybody, hold the line, Matt. We will be watching very closely and carefully. The regime is trying to take Matt out because he is really holding the line. God bless you, Matt. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns.
What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.